Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Okay, welcome to Near Miss Listen and Learn. This is our first podcast for 2009. I want to extend thanks to firehouse.com for making the podcast a reality, and thanks to all of you that have supported the program to date and made it the success that it is. We're interested in your feedback. We'd like you to email your thoughts to us at nearmiss@iafc.org if you have a suggestion for a topic you'd like to hear about. I'm John Tippett. I'm a battalion chief with Montgomery County, Maryland Fire Rescue Service, currently working as a safety battalion chief, and also serve as a project manager, the fire service project manager for the International Association of Fire Chiefs, which manages the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. Joining me again today as the voice of our reports is Todd Clist. Todd's a captain with the Sterling Volunteer Fire Company in Loudoun County, Virginia, and he's also the IFC's project manager for the Wildland Urban Interface and Interstate Mutual Aid programs. In this edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn, we're going to focus on the fourth in a five-part series we've been doing that talks about the elements of crew resource management issues that have been identified in near miss reports. We know from experience that about 80% of what goes wrong on the incident scene, in our fire stations, and just about at every avenue involves a human failure or human factor of some part. So we're going to talk about situational awareness this month, and we're also going to add the added impact of what happens with cold weather emergencies and how cold weather affects the way we operate. So it should be an interesting report. This edition can be found on the website in the resources page and also by using the search reports feature. Option number two, type in 08511. That's our feature report for this edition. And you'll see the report when it comes up there. So just as a review here, crew resource management, again, consists of five principles that were created as a result of Dr. Robert Helmreich's evaluation of post-air crash cockpit voice recordings. Dr. Helmreich came to the conclusion that what happened inside the cockpit was the result of the humans not working well, of culture that was built into the cockpit, and of a whole host of a lack of generally communication, decision-making, teamwork, situational awareness, and task allocation issues. The goal of CRM in any environment is the enhanced supervisory and team performance through the use of all resources, regardless of that person's time and grade or where they sit in the command structure. Dr. Helmreich hypothesized that if crews were trained to focus attention and be aware of breakdowns in those five principles, that safety would be enhanced and performance would be improved. 30-plus years downstream, these hypotheses are proving correct again and again, with air travel being one of the safest modes of transportation today, and other organizations and industries that are adopting crew resource management are coming up with the same results. The crew resource management principle of situational awareness is one of the most frequently cited contributing factors to human failure. It's certainly become the buzzword of the 21st century. Situational awareness is a term that applies to one's perception versus reality in its simplest forms. It's where the two collide, really. It's where reality and perception come together. Situational awareness really is composed of three parts or levels. The first level is capturing all the elements of the current condition, which can be simply boiled down to paying attention. The second level is comprehending the situation or making sense or interpreting what's going on. And the third is predicting the future, which is also known as story building. The big issue there is not recognizing the reality, which is a failing at any of the three levels, whether you weren't paying attention because of something, you don't comprehend the situation to be as dangerous as it is, or when you build your story, you don't come up with the same ending as the reality. So one of the things that happens in our failing is that we often try to force that reality to fit into our perception. We want to be able to make the situation work the way we think it should be, sort of as if the sun and the moon revolved around us as opposed to the other way around. Our brain will even go so far as to discredit vivid impressions from the senses if those sounds, smells, and images don't match what the brain thinks is supposed to or has incorrectly projected to be the outcome. A quick visit to YouTube will, and also to the Near Miss Reporting System resources page will come up with a whole host of video clips that will show you misinterpretations or miscommunications of what's going on. In practical terms, we want that end of the story to fit the way we project it should end. So we discount other impressions. We don't pay attention to what's going on. And not paying attention to that stimuli can have some catastrophic results. One of the most frequently uttered sentences that indicate a loss of situational awareness took place is the, "I wasn't expecting that." And then one of the often used statements that we see in line of duty death reports and significant injury reports, whether they're first person accounts of the injured or the results of the investigation, are that crews or individuals were caught by surprise. Typically, that means that there was some reduction in situational awareness and they missed factors. Now, we have several strategies that can be employed to ward off the loss of situational awareness. The first is to be aware of the six elements that are known as the situational loss factors. These loss factors can come into play at any given time, and the more we're aware that we can lose them, the more aware we are that our situational awareness is on the slide. The first loss factor to be alert for is called ambiguity. Ambiguous situations are those that seem to have more than one answer, or we believe can have more than one outcome. So when situations are ambiguous, we're often stuck when it comes to making a choice because we don't have enough information to make that best choice. So when we lack that information or we're sort of caught between about what's happening, there's a 50-50 chance or worse of making that wrong choice. One given example of ambiguity is arriving at the scene of a residential structure fire, and you note that there's a car or there's more than one car in the driveway. The ambiguity of that situation is whether or not somebody's in the house, just because we see the cars. We don't have enough information to say emphatically yes or no, so what we need to do is compile more information or make an attempt to get more information to clear up the confusion. In a number of line-of-duty death reports, firefighters were reported to have entered structures because of cars being in the driveway, only to find out later that that was the local place where carpools assembled or somebody had left for vacation and they'd all piled in one car and left. A second loss factor is distraction. And simply put, we don't have our full time and attention directed to the task at hand. And certainly probably the most vivid example of that is just take a look around if you're driving down the road to see who has both hands on the wheel versus who has one hand on the cell phone and the other hand on their Burger King sandwich. The opposite of distraction is fixation. In that point, an individual or team is drawn to a specific task despite indicators telling them they need to change course. A good example of fixation in the fire service is the effort that goes into working on a trauma code victim that's entangled in an auto because they appear to be at the most distress and not assessing or treating any of the other occupants that climbed out of the vehicle or walking around. In many cases, that trauma code victim is certainly on the deceased category, and you'll have several other traumas walking around, but they're being ignored because all the attention is focused on the victim that's already deceased. Overload is our fourth loss factor. The human mind can only absorb a finite number of inputs at any given time. Each of us has a different payload, but on average, there's about 7 to 10 things we can process at any one time before we start to lose track of things. So a good example of overload is those opening moments at the scene of a command post being established or during that working incident when you're trying to assess all the conditions and what your action plan needs to be. The remaining loss factors include things like complacency and something known as the unresolved discrepancy. We should all be well aware of these pitfalls, especially of complacency, since it doesn't just affect us when we operate on the emergency scene. Essentially, we're at risk from the hazards of complacency because we diminish the risks of any job that we do, or because nothing serious has happened in a dangerous situation, so we begin to become overly comfortable with it. The unresolved discrepancy poses a very unique problem because of the conflict it causes in the brain. We will see something that's going wrong. Part of us recognizes that something's going wrong, but we don't react to it because we don't recognize or truly recognize the gravity of that situation. So there are two strategies that are out there proposed for fighting that or countering that loss of situational awareness. The first is a simple four-question checklist that makes sure that everyone is on the same page. And this checklist is something that you should be sharing with all the people that you're working with. It goes to improving teamwork. It also helps with your decision-making. It sort of rounds out some of those communication factors that we've highlighted in previous near-miss listen and learn events. So the four questions that we want to talk about are, what do we have here? And that's an overhead question that's asked of everybody that's in there. So we're all interpreting the same sights and sounds and smells. The next is, what is going on here? Do we all perceive the incident as the same? The next question is going to be, how are we doing? And if you're in a situation, if you're in an incident where there's good situational awareness, you'll have a feel or a sense that everything is going very smooth. That's one of the elements of good situational awareness, where everything feels like it's going okay. And the last question to ask is that, does this look or feel right? And one of the things that we've done a great job of doing is suppressing the fear that comes along with the work in emergency services, necessarily to a certain degree, so that we can accomplish goals and take appropriate risks. But on the other hand, some of us have done such a great job of suppressing that sense of flight or fight that comes into us that we walk into some pretty dangerous situations. The second strategy that we want to talk about is a three-question battery that's designed to make sure that there's continuous information exchange and updating, known to us as size-up, between the crew members and the crew leader of any situation. So the three questions that you want to ask are, what do I know that the rest of the crew needs to know? What information do you have as with your experience, knowledge, and skills that the rest of the crew could benefit from? Like, how often have you been to the structure? Or do you know that given the fire conditions that you're seeing on arrival, you're going to need a large diameter hand line? The person that's trapped in the car is going to require more than the rescue tools you carry on your engine. We'll need a heavy rescue from a neighboring department, so on and so forth. What does the crew know that I need to know? And this goes back to our last segment where we talked about teamwork. Finding out who the people are in your group or your crew and find out what information they know. It could be that the person riding behind you on the rig grew up in that neighborhood, and he knows the back alleys, he knows the side streets, he knows where the hydrants are. He can tell you the local contact information for a closed vendor, those types of things. And last but not least, the third question out there to ask is, what do we all need to know about this incident? What is the information that everybody needs to have so that they can conduct themselves efficiently, effectively, and safely on the fire ground? So, now that we're armed with the knowledge, the loss of situational awareness is a major factor in fire service tragedies and also near-miss events. We also now have a working definition of situational awareness and two strategies for preventing the loss of situational awareness. We're going to take a short break while you digest that information before we go to this edition's case study.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
The 2009 Safety 24/7/365 Near-Miss Safety Calendar is now available from Near-Miss in two formats. You can download it from www.firefighternearmiss.com by clicking on the Resources page. Once on the Resources page, look for the 2009 Near-Miss Calendar heading in the left column. Hard copies are available by emailing Kennedy Keenan, KKEENAN at IAFC.org or nearmiss at IAFC.org. Be sure to include a mailing address and the number of copies you need. This year's calendar highlights 12 near-miss topics reviewed by a mix of the fire service's top authors and speakers. The 2009 calendar is made possible through the United States Department of Homeland Security's Assistance to Firefighters Grant Program, which funds the National Firefighter Near-Miss Reporting System.
Okay, welcome back. In this edition of Near-Miss Listen and Learn, we're focusing on the CRM principle of situational awareness, and we're going to feature a near-miss report that highlights hazards associated with cold weather as well. Operating in cold weather presents a number of impacts that affect situational awareness at a variety of different levels. Well, we pretty readily recognize that we're distracted by the sheer cold, the effects of precipitation and slippery footing. Our vision is impacted on a regular basis because we're wearing hoods and other garments that block our vision. And we also have an issue with the amount of reduced daylight, so our visual acuity is reduced. Just about at every level, when we operate in cold weather events, we're forced to heighten our situational awareness because we become less and less able to rely on some of our other senses. So our feature report this month is 08-511. Because we're working with two topics this month, we're only going to look at one report, and we're going to be looking at it from the situational awareness impacts as well as the impact that cold weather had on this report. It was submitted by a firefighter in a paid municipal department in FEMA Region Number 8. I'm going to turn it over to Todd now for the review of the report.
The scene is the right shoulder breakdown lane of a divided highway in the western suburbs. Dispatched to a rollover accident, initial response was two engines, one for traffic safety, and an ambulance. Self-assigned was a district chief temporarily housed with the first due engine and ambulance. The approach to the accident location is uphill across a short bridge with no change in grade of the highway. Near the top of the hill is a right-hand curve with off-ramp. Weather conditions of the location were wet roads and temperatures close to or below freezing. This was the first truly cold conditions of the fall. Black ice on the bridge was observed by the driver engineer. In the trailing ambulance, I noticed the irrigation system of a townhome nearby complex with steam or mist rising off of the water. The engine parked and angled toward the shoulder of the breakdown lane on the right side of the highway with wheel chocks. The ambulance parked 150 feet in front of the engine, hugging the soft shoulder of the breakdown lane. The rolled over vehicle was on its roof approximately 100 feet up an adjacent hill on a fence that bordered a bike path. Most of the crews of both rigs were on the hill interviewing and checking for injuries. No injuries were found. The engineer was preparing to set out cones as the fire chief arrived and pulled up behind the engine. The traffic safety engine had not arrived on scene yet. Suddenly, there was a skidding noise heard, and the engineer quickly sought protection behind the truck. The chief was able to close his partially open driver's door as a pickup truck traveling sideways at highway speed struck the rear left corner of the engine. The pickup truck impact was right rear quarter of the bed. It came to a stop approximately 100 feet in front of the ambulance. The engine shuddered forward and about a foot and had to be backed off the chocks. My lesson is learned. Situational awareness is key. The cold, the bridge, the sprinklers, the time of day are all contributing factors to a potentially bad outcome. Something had already gone wrong for someone, and that's why we were there anyway. Preparation and knowing how and where to position and what create safety zones are leads to going home the next day. Dumb luck and not ignoring an unexpected noise will always help. A couple of seconds sooner or later, and this would have been a tragic event instead of a property damage only. Even if you are tired or just woke up, train yourself to notice all you can and place yourself in the best spot for good outcome. I was in the ambulance, and we were in good safety area to work from. The engine was as prepared as it could be, have been, and did its job. The chief didn't ignore something and narrowly missed participating in his own funeral.
Okay, thanks, Todd. Well, in this particular incident, we're looking at something that takes place during cold weather environments. And the impact of cold weather could have had a very significant reduction in the ability of these firefighters to perform their jobs efficiently. One of the things that the reporter emphasizes is paying attention to the surroundings as you're going there. He also points out something that is really significant, and that's making sure, especially if you're going out on highway events, that something has already gone wrong for somebody, and that's why we're going in the first place. Knowing the weather, paying attention to what the weather conditions are. He notes that there was cold. He notes that he was going to a bridge. He notes that he observed mist or steam coming off the sprinklers, which is indicative of the water in the sprinkler system being warmer than the ambient air. All were points of him that raised his situational awareness so that he recognized what was going on. He also emphasizes things like preparation and not shortcutting so that your safety zones are in place. The effect of or the impact of people paying attention and reacting to noises unexpected also helps avoid trouble there. So, noticing your surroundings, shadows on the roadway, going to a bridge, the projected weather forecast, and even something as simple as noticing frosty breath when you walk outside are all indications that the possibility you could be operating on frozen roads. They also have an impact on how you're going to be able to make connections or break connections on hydrants. They also come into play when it comes to considering what your footing is going to be like once you arrive on the scene. Another point to keep in mind is once you get into these incidents, that your footing is going to change dramatically. So if you do have to react, if the ground is slippery, you're going to have some trouble with tread and being able to make a quick escape. So apparatus positioning is critically important. The overarching message here is that when we operate in cold weather opportunities, the possibility of injury, the possibility of a tragic outcome, the possibility of more things going wrong is elevated just because of a change in the temperature. So it's critically important that you maintain your situational awareness checklist. You ask those four questions so that we're all on the same page. You go through the crew mental joggers, constantly checking and rechecking and cross-checking of information. And when we flip back to the checklist, are we all on the same page? Do we all see the same thing? Are we all experiencing the same thing? How are we doing here? How does it feel this incident's going? When we get to the crew mental joggers, what type of information do you have? What type of information do the people around you have? And what type of information does everyone need to share so that they can all get back on the rig and make it back to the station safely? Well, that's going to wrap up our first podcast for 2009. We hope this first edition has provided you with some new tools that you can put to use now to ensure that you and everyone else you respond with don't get caught by surprises, and that when it comes to something as critical as situational awareness, you're more able to stay in focus with what's going on. So until next time, I want you to be vigilant, stay focused, and make sure you listen and learn.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.